Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Still broadcasting in high-quality mono sound at AM 1570. We're putting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back together, putting the band back together. It's 2023, a new year, and there's new crab cakes to be had. We're going to be at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog, no longer in Highland Town, where I've been eating them for the first 53 years of my life. We're going to be out in White Marsh. I had some breakfast out there this summer. Going to be visiting with Andy for a crab cake. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have a handful of holiday cash drops, a handful of Ravens leftovers and meanderers through the winter, and big jackpots as well at the lottery. And our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, I've been talking about that. I have waited to have a lot of people on into the new year because I'm like, well, you know, I just had him or her on recently. But it's been like going on 4 or 5 months now since Pam Wood joined us over at Costas on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It was so long ago, we didn't even have an election. We were talking about the election on the front end. She, of course, is at the Baltimore Banner, and I'm pleased to have her back on for a lot of reasons. But more than that, she covered the stadium story earlier this week that I was sort of tipped off to. I knew this thing was sort of coming down the pike, and I think she tweeted about it as well. Pamela Wood joins us from the Baltimore Banner, where they just hired our friend Jonah Schaefer over from the Baltimore Sun to cover all things Ravens and postseason. How are you? Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Nestor. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I know the most important thing for you is the Orioles are 0-0, and there's a fresh chance here this year. You come at this honest. You even tweeted you love covering sports when you're given the opportunity to do this. You've sort of flown into a space that I have covered from, and, you know, Chad Steele and Steve would be disappointed to hear, but I was talking about this stuff in 1993 and 94 when Herb Belgrad was trying to steal a team before John Moog came. All that goes into luring an NFL team that we lost here in March of 1984, bringing a team back. And then how do you get the team to stay? You built the stadium, the stadium's here, you keep the stadium up, you bring Billy Joel in, you bring Jay-Z in, you try to get the World Cup, you do what you do. But this is really a state money issue and where all these franchises have gone in value and what the future holds for all of them once they see the bigger, shiny city built in Atlanta or in New England or in Vegas or wherever it would be. But Steve Bisciotti made a decision to stay here, and I'm good with all of that, but I do want to understand this $600 million, and I know that's where you come in.
Yeah, absolutely. So the two stadiums we have in Baltimore, M&T Bank Stadium for the Ravens and Oriole Park at Camden Yards for the Orioles, of course, they're owned by the state, the Maryland Stadium Authority. They were, you know, built and paid for by taxpayers. So you and me, we own those stadiums. So we have a stake, you know, financially in what happens there. And of course, the city as a whole economically, having those teams in, you know, being drivers of, you know, tourism and locals as well. So in order for those teams to play at the stadiums, they have to reach a deal with the government of the state of Maryland in order to have a lease. And the Ravens just signed a new lease for M&T Bank Stadium. It's going to keep them there for a minimum of 15 years. And then there's 2 5-year options. So it could be 25 more years that the Ravens are here in Baltimore playing at M&T.
Well, and that's, you know, again, I was a guy trying so hard, and I always tell this sad story of being at the bar at Bohager's with champagne on ice. The second one, when they gave Charlotte the first team, the second press conference was Jacksonville out in Chicago. This is the famous one where Mayor Schaefer cried, Governor Schaefer then cried, and Paul Tagliabue told us to build the museum. We've come a long way, right? A couple of parades, quarterbacks, controversies, coaches. One of them has been my partner for the last 15 years as well, and Coach Brian Billick. The significance of the franchise, this money and where it comes from and who agrees to it. I remembered all of this when Schaefer was saying to then Jack Kent Cook, you're not building a stadium in Laurel. I'm not giving you infrastructure to where a 15-year deal. Some fans may say, well, it's 30 years first time. Why 15? Well, the stadium's getting a little older and where they are. 15 seems to be the standard re-up deal, I think, through the industry. The NFL's happy about this. We're happy that we're not going to be the franchise that's moving off to London or Frankfurt. Let them figure that out with the Chargers and the Jaguars and all these other teams that sort of have dangled, because all of these franchises in my lifetime have dangled waiting for a stadium or some municipality. I mean, look at the Washington team now, dangling Maryland, DC, and Virginia, and they got a lame duck owner. And so stability is something we didn't have when I started my career 30 years ago. We didn't have a football team, but the money. Where does the money come from? Who agrees to it? I see this board is three people, right? So there were three parties that rubber stamped this at the end. But I remembered all the wrangling in Annapolis years ago when it came to finding, I think then about $300 million to build the stadium at the time, that this is now double that money, and I'm not going to get into inflation in 30 years, and I'm good with all of this. I am trying to understand this $600 million and why Chad Steele doesn't want to talk about it, why nobody wants to say when you've asked the questions, what are we going to find out about this money and what it's really earmarked for? And who decide? I think the Ravens are the ones that say, we want that coat of paint. We want this. Am I correct in saying that?
So let me run down the basics of what happens here. So that's, yeah, the stadium opened in the late 90s and taxpayers paid for it, 200 some odd million dollars. So under the deal, the Ravens will pay $0 in rent to the state of Maryland. The Ravens are responsible for the operations and kind of the regular maintenance of the stadium. And that last year amounted to about $11 million. So, you know, they're doing the upkeep on the stadium. The amusement tax goes partially to the state, partially to the city. That's, you know, one of those taxes that you pay
How
on
much is
your
that? If I buy
tickets.
a $100 ticket for the playoff game, what how much of that money goes to not the league or the to literally the state?
I'd have to check. I believe the amusement and admission tax is 10%. I
Ish.
could
Okay,
be
that's
wrong.
fine. Yeah, no, I'm just
Yeah,
trying
so.
to get a grip on how much when we go there and buy a beer and do all of these things, how much the state really does drink in from that for free rent, right? I mean, free rent's free rent. We can talk about these billionaires and the value of the team shooting up over $1 billion since the last time you and I got together. When you and I got together at Costas, we were like, well, you know, they if the Washington teams were five, they're worth 3.5. Now the Washington teams were seven and they're worth five. So that's how quickly the valuations of these things go up. So we are talking about a valuation that went up $1 billion and the state's giving them 600 million. And this was years ago, it was all you could do to get 200 million and freeze up everybody just to get the deal done and the sweetheart deal for Art, which was free rent. Come here. Don't stay in Cleveland. We want the team here. This is a much better deal than having to wrangle a new team. I'll agree to all of that. I'm just trying to figure out who voted on this? Like where did the agreement have to have? And it really felt like it's rubber stamped from the beginning, because that's the way it is for these franchises, because you don't want to lose a franchise.
And these terms of the, you know, the Ravens not paying rent, but they pay the operations and maintenance, and you know, the amusement tax goes to the government. This is all pretty much in keeping with the agreement they had in place already, you know, for the last, you know, 20 plus years. Now let me explain the $600 million part. So the Maryland General Assembly, our state lawmakers, passed a bill in 20, I almost said it earlier this year, but we're in a new year. In 2022, they passed legislation that gave the Maryland Stadium Authority the ability to spend up to $1.2 billion on the Orioles and the Ravens to issue bonds to finance, you know, renovations and upgrades. And you know, both of these stadiums are beautiful stadiums. I enjoy them both, but you know, you're in that sort of arms race a little bit with all the other cities and the teams, and you see what they're doing with theirs stadiums, and they're in need of some upgrades. So that's where state lawmakers were involved. The lease itself was voted on by the Board of Public Works, which is wonky sounding. It's basically the governor, the comptroller, and the treasurer.
That's what I say. It sounds like a board. It's three people, right?
Yeah,
Literally, right? And this
it's
was
three
probably
people.
set up by Schaefer 30 years ago to be a little bit of a, we're just going to get this done. We're not going to fight about it. We're going to have three people. We're going to agree, and we're all going to come out kumbaya, and we're going to do a deal, right?
Well, the Board of Public Works, what they do is they sign off on all important and major state contracts. So, you know, when you're, you know, talking about you know, who you know runs the airports, or you know, dredging in the Chesapeake Bay, and like, you know, renovations at state government buildings. That's what they do. It's like contracts, and a lot of it's really routine, but sometimes there's really big deal public stuff that comes before that board, like the stadium lease. And so eventually we'll see if the Orioles reach a deal with the Maryland Stadium Authority. If they do, that'll go before the same board as well, governor, comptroller, and treasurer.
So I'm famously anti-Angelos here from the because I've been here. I've witnessed what's going on since we built the stadium, and he bought it 30 years ago now. And it's funny, I'm not even interested in that part of it. I was told weeks ago by some insiders that Steve wanted to get this done with Larry because he falls more on the Republican side and wanted to give Larry some bonbons on the way out, make sure it got done, and that the Orioles would be more thought thought to be more waiting on Wes, that they might get a better deal there, and or their father's situation, and or the mother's situation, and or the fact that they're not in a hurry because they're looking for the bigger, better deal, and Nashville and other places may be involved in that. Steve never allowed this to get messy, even through two leadership groups, because Dick Cass was running the place this time last year, Sashi Brown now this time. But there is a point where the Ravens are responsible for this money, correct? Right? Like, this money will be earmarked by the Ravens via the stadium authority to do something to the state. Does it have to be in the stadium? Can they build a casino in the parking lot? I'm just trying to understand what the freedom of the money is, because I have Neil DeMoss coming on after you, Pam. By the way, Pam Wood is our guest from the Baltimore Banner. She covered all things. She covers all. We're going to get into the rest of inaugurations and all this up and beyond stadium and stuff. But I am really just trying to understand why they're all so quiet and why there wasn't more of, we're going to do this, that, and the other thing, and thank you very much for coming. And that might have been a little, but they don't run that way. Clearly, they intimidate and bully, you know, media people like me since the last time we got together. But I'm just trying to figure, I can't ask the questions anymore. So I'm sort of relying on you or them to have some transparency that they didn't at least have earlier this week. What happens with this money that's twice the amount of money that it built the stadium to begin with? It's just a lot of money.
Yeah, so the renovations that'll be forthcoming to M&T Bank Stadium, those contracts, my understanding is those will come before the Board of Public Works as well, that they will have to sign off on, you know, the major work there, is my understanding. Now, I asked,
well, you
Sashi
are improving
Brown,
a state facility, right?
Yes.
Like, literally. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, just like, you know, right now they're renovating the state house. They're doing some repairs there. All those contracts went before the Board of Public Works. So it's just much bigger scale. I asked Sashi Brown, you know, what could be coming? What might fans see? What might players see improvements to the stadium? And he said, you know, still yet to work that out. He wouldn't give me any hints. I actually asked that, any hints? And he said, nope, sorry. Now, one thing Dick Cass said previously was, he was interested in the idea of adding more, you know, suite or club, you know, box type seating closer down to the field, you know, premium seating, you know, instead of being, you know, high up, way closer to the playing field. So that's something Dick Cass said before. I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of it, but, you know, we really have to wait and see. The Ravens are being pretty tight-lipped about, you know, what they're going to pursue, you know, with the renovations.
Well, it is standard, right? I mean, you've been to any of these new facilities, and I even caught video. And again, I'm watching the games on TV like everybody else at this point, but I caught video the other day from this week's game where, like, there are fans now waiting outside the locker room underneath the Raven Stadium. I saw Bisciotti and players walking past fans in the same way that I saw it in Dallas. So the access to that and the VIP part of that and the being closer to and where the band sits and, like, all of those parts of a smallish bowl, but a bowl still big enough that it could have housed World Cup soccer, which was a, you know, tremendous loss. And I know we talked about that a little bit months ago, just in regard to these stadium, what else they can be used for. Jay-Z concerts, Billy Joel concerts, Springsteen's on tour, like all of those kinds of things that this could be about. Pam Wood is here. She does more than just stadium waiting on opening day. By the way, they open at Fenway Park and they get the Yankees at home April 6th. So I did add that to my schedule here. For you with this time of year, and you've been doing this a long time, even though you still look young and spry, but I saw those old Paris Glendening pictures here. But this time every 4 years, there's inauguration, there's change in Annapolis, and we have been a state where there's been a lot of, God bless Mike Bushes and different people that have been here a long, long time that have been a part of it for a long, long time. Boy, it feels like things are about to change in your part of the world, right? Like, it really feels like after eight, and we talked about this on the front end of what might happen, and I don't think anybody gave Dan Cox a real opportunity, real chance to win, but so much has happened in the last couple months since you and I got together that I want to have fun with the stadiums and Bisciotti and all that, but I really do want you to peel back what we're expecting in this massive change, other than John Angelos and the Angelos family negotiating with Wes Moore for Stadia, but there's about to be a big, big change happen here, and I'm excited about it as a citizen. I really, really am.
Yeah, on January 18th, we're going to go from having Republican Governor Larry Hogan to Democratic Governor Wes Moore. You know, 8 years where we had some divided leadership in Annapolis, which has pros and cons. The General Assembly, state lawmakers, they are, you know, 2-1 Democrats there, 2/3 Democrats. They can kind of do whatever they want. But, you know, Governor Hogan had his own ideas and influence, and there was push and pull there for 8 years. Now we're going into all Democrats. And in addition, there's some turnover, you know, some people retired, took other jobs, new people got elected, incumbents got, you know, defeated. So there's going to be some fresh blood in Annapolis as well. It's going to be really interesting to see how Governor-elect Wes Moore does, because he's never governed before. You know, he's not a mayor or county executive, hasn't been a lawmaker. He's worked in the private sector and in the nonprofit world. You know, he's still building his team. And you know, we'll see how that's going to go. I think that's going to be in particular something really interesting to watch. Somebody who is truly an outsider to government, you know, has been, you know, involved in government. He's, you know, testified before. You know, he's gotten government grants before, but like not really being in the government. And you know, how that plays out as governor is, I think, going to be really a fascinating storyline.
Well, you've been at this a long time. What's going to frustrate him?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things that Governor-elect Moore says all the time is that we're going to go fast and we're going to be aggressive and we're going to make change. And the wheels of government turn very slowly, even when you are, you know, even if the General Assembly is on board with everything he wants to do, it takes time to pass a bill and for the funding to trickle out and for you got to wait for the fiscal year to start. And you know, things move a lot more slowly, and there's a lot of pieces than in the private sector. You know, when you run a private business, if you want to change up your podcast, you can do it like that. You can't do it like that in government. So that could potentially be an area of frustration for Wes Moore.
The Baltimore Banner, you're in the newsroom there. Mm-hmm. I miss a newsroom. You know, every time I see an old movie or All the President's Men, and, you know, I worked at the Sun in the 80s and the 90s, so we still had those big cubicles down on Calvert Street. It was even before they went down to Port Covington. And I want to give you some oxygen, because this was always like they're taking on a new thing, and I knew MTS and Kimmy, and we had them out, and it feels like it's up and running, and it's a buck for 6 months, and you're putting together a sports department, and but more than that, I think the culture thing that I've seen on the outside was this necessity in some way to drag y'all down to the Inner Harbor and have you look at the boats out the window, which I did for 19 years at my window, and thinking about the city you're serving to some degree. And I find that to be interesting. And I find for all of you, at least when you're out tweeting about ducks in the harbor and doing different things around the city, that that it's been different. The Banner's different than the Sun. And I don't need to tell you, because you worked at both of them.
Yeah. I mean, they are different. They're both great. You know, I subscribe to the Baltimore Sun. I have friends over there. I love being at the Banner, though. Yeah, we are in the Inner Harbor. You know, just out the window next to me is
well,
the National Aquarium.
Well, you're backlit right now. You're just completely backlit.
So, yeah, it's great to be in a newsroom in the city. It's a little odd sometimes to be in the Inner Harbor, because we're kind of in a tourist area. You know, in downtown workers, we're not like, you know, in a real neighborhood where people live. But it's actually fun. I get to see all the school kids go on their field trips when I'm here. And it's nice that we can walk to City Hall, walk to police headquarters, you know, walk to the courts, to be like in the city is great after, you know, the pandemic. There was a lot of working from home and that sort of thing. And it's really fun to be in Baltimore, which is the, you know, the heart of the community that we serve.
You know, people ask me like about my failed mayoral expectations. When you live in the city and you look out the window and you see the potential and you've loved it your whole life and you look behind and see purple lights or red, white and blue lights this week in regard to DeMar Hamlin and seeing the city come to life on New Year's Eve or through the holidays, or the man who saved my wife's life is from Germany. And when they landed Christmas night, everything was quiet, right? Because they landed Christmas afternoon, but we drove up through the harbor and saw the Christmas village and the German. I miss it. Don't get me started now. And next week it'll be a year since I left, but you guys moved in around then. For your place in news and what you're doing and the job you're reporting on and the stories and the latitude you've had as one of the senior folks there, one of the first in, as they would say, I've seen the thing kind of come to life from Ted Venatulis telling me about it in his car 2 years ago, conceptually. I know this guy, he wants to start a paper, you know, to where it is. Y'all should be proud, really. I mean, you've made a dent in storytelling and made a difference already. And I think you knew that. But more than that, the coming together of all of it, it hadn't even been a year. been
Yeah,
8 months, literally.
it's for me, it's a really great opportunity to still serve the community and, you know, decode politics and state government, you know, for our readers. And, you know, we've come so far. What the Baltimore Banner looks like today is different from what it looked like 6 months ago. And 6 months from now, it's going to be even different. And you mentioned Jonah Schaefer. He is part of a sports department that we are building. I'm super excited to have him on board. We have Andy Koska covering the Orioles. The sports department is hiring like crazy. We're working on pushing further out into the suburbs. We brought on my former editor, Rick Hutzel, is a columnist covering Annapolis and Anne Arundel County, and we're looking to get reporters down there. It's really exciting. I hope people will stay tuned. And, you know, we've got that great deal right now for a dollar for 6 months, and hopefully you'll get a taste of what we have and see. You know, we're going to bring even more and more to the greater Baltimore area in the months to come.
I want to turn this onto the journalism side for me and getting thrown out by the Ravens, sort of, you know, I'm not speaking anything other than truth, but after the game this week in Cincinnati, there will be maybe three reporters. Jonas is on your team now. Sometimes he went, sometimes he didn't go. And there will be Jameson and Jeff Zrebeck before Jeff was on paternity leave here this year. There's so few reporters left, which is the really highly offensive part for me when Chad Steele's threatening me, bullying me, all throwing me out, like all of that. There's so few people left asking questions. What does that look like at a Westmore inauguration and the day after and the General Assembly in Annapolis versus a younger version of you, let's say a few years ago, but being really frank and honest, when you were Capitol and all the, there was just so much more journalism being done. And I don't like it at the football level, even talking about $600 million for the richest guy in the state, who's got a $5 billion entity getting free money. I talk about it more from like the real stuff that you're covering, which isn't just a business taking advantage of government. It's government people taking advantage of government, which we've had a lot of in the city that I know you've covered in Healthy Holly and all the other things that have gone on in gift cards. But asking the questions and accountability, I'm flattered you spend time with me, because your level of understanding the wonkiness of all of this, it isn't for everyone. I mean, they need people like you that are seasoned people there. What does that look like percentage wise day to day? Because I hear horror stories in small towns and other places where papers have literally dried up. Knock on wood and not, you know, like all of that. At least we have a couple of places left, because it looked like everybody was going away at one point.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the role of journalists and how I view my job is to, you know, explain and translate what's going on in government, but also to ask those questions and to bring accountability, you know, to the actions of the government, what they're doing in our name and with our tax dollars. And the State House press corps is smaller than it once was. Certainly there's a lot of quality people. We're working really hard. We're smaller. I'm glad the Baltimore Banner's on the scene, because now we've got, you know, a few more reporters down there in the State House asking questions and, you know, that didn't exist before. And it's important across all beats to have that. And, you know, an example of the importance of the local press and for people to pay attention, you look at Congressman-elect George Santos up in New York. He's the guy who like lied multiple things about his resume, his business, his education. It was all just completely fabricated. And a little local paper up there did some coverage of it, but nobody really paid attention. And then the New York Times dropped a big story after he had already won the election. And it's like, people didn't have that information to make that choice at the ballot box. But people should have been paying attention, because it was those local reporters. And I'll say one thing about what it looks like in Annapolis on Inauguration Day on January 18th. There are going to be a million reporters covering the inaugural ceremony of Governor-elect Wes Moore. But what happens on January 19th? It's going to go back down to the same group of about 15 or 20 of us who were there every day, you know, writing about what he's doing, what the lawmakers are doing. You know, we'll get a lot on that day, but it's the day to day, every single day, that matters the most.
15 or 20, you just outed yourself. You gave me enough. How many were there in 1995, 2000, the turn of the century? Was it?
Oh, I don't know. That was 50? Before my time.
but there were a lot more than that at one point, correct?
There were more. And we've lost, you know, we've lost publications in Maryland. The weekly Gazette newspapers in Prince George's and Montgomery, a lot of the regional papers used to send, you know, a State House reporter, you know, the Annapolis paper, Cecil County paper, Salisbury, Hagerstown, Frederick, they used to send people every single day to cover the General Assembly. And now a lot of them don't. They'll just come from time to time, or they'll rely on the Associated Press. So that's where we've really seen a diminishment. Or the Baltimore Sun used to have 4 people, and now they have 2. So that's kind of where you're seeing it. So it's definitely less, but there are good reporters down there. I like competing against them and working alongside them every day. We're still working just as hard, even though there's fewer of us.
Pam Wood is our guest. You should give her a follow and certainly give them a chance over at the Baltimore Banner. P. Wood reporter, Pamela Wood. She follows us, which we appreciate as well when we're allowed to be on Twitter. They don't like journalists so much on Twitter lately. Last thing for you. You said, Wes, mm-hmm. There's been a lot of journalists on the 18th and covering. My wife wants to go to the ball because she saw the dresses and said, hey, it's a ball. Let's go. And I'm like, all right. So
they're promising it's going to be a good party.
I'm going to shave up and clean my hair. I'm going to do it upright, and I'm going to roll VIP as best I can. I would say this, that there's a rock star quality to him that comes along with the turf of who he is and the energy he brings. And he swore to me that day he sat next to you at Costas that time, two and a half years ago Christmas, we had him on, and he was literally not running for – there was no mention. I went back and watched the interview. He didn't feel like a gubernatorial. He felt like a guy running a business that was proud of Baltimore that was on to maybe something great, but we didn't know what that was going to be. Don said he thought he was going to run for mayor at some point at that time. And now he goes into this position in – such a unique, I mean, there's just so many unique stories. As a writer of writings, if you come in from the outside and say, who is this guy and what is this? It's a hell of a story in a lot of ways. And people want to tell the story. And it's probably, of all the inaugurations, of all the things that are going to happen a week and a half from now in the news cycle, this is going to be an above the fold thing, not just in Annapolis or Baltimore or here.
Yeah, well, one thing that's important to remember about Wes Moore is he is not only is he Maryland's first Black governor, all of our governors have been, you know, white guys. There have only been 4 Black governors in the history of the United States, and only 2 of those were elected. 2 of them were, you know, one was appointed and one was a lieutenant governor who was elevated. So only 2 actually got elected in their own right. He's the 3rd elected Black governor in the history of the entire country, which is kind of insane when you think about it. We're in 2023.
That just makes me want to stop for a minute, and I have to do the math on that. And it's almost like Black football coaches in the NFL, when, you know, on a math basis, you have to sit back and say, how is that possible? Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, I grew up during Reagan. I sort of get it. You know, I get where we were 5 years ago around here. And it's remarkable. I mean, it's an incredible story, and it's a story I think the state should drink in to some degree. But I think nationally, I'm going to have relatives that live other places that are going to know plenty about this by January 21st, I would think, right?
Well, yeah. And also, you know, the Democratic Party nationally, you know, they're looking for a new generation of leadership. I mean, you know, President Joe Biden, not exactly a spring chicken, you know, former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, you know, same thing. They're looking for these younger folks to take the party forward into the next generation. And Wes Moore, he's 44 years old. He's part of that conversation already, even though he hasn't even governed a day in his life. He's the kind of person that the Democrats are looking for.
Well, and certainly Barack Obama didn't run Illinois at the time. Pam, I'm going to let you get back to reporting and doing all this stuff. What's on your mind as the new year begins, other than, the Orioles Stadium thing? Maybe I'll put the lead at the end, which is, hey, are the Orioles in peril? John says they're going to be here as long as the Rockets are red glare.
Who knows?
What happens? You don't know. You have no insight into that.
Well, the whole situation is very messy with the Angelos family and the future of the law firm and the team and the family fighting in court. And while all that is happening, you know, there's been negotiations going on between the Orioles and the stadium authority. And we've heard those rumors, you know, does John want to take the team to Nashville, or he says no. And, you know, the commissioner says the Orioles are going to stay in Baltimore. Like, who knows exactly what the truth is or what's going to happen. But certainly the Ravens secured their long-term future here. I know the state government, the outgoing governor wants to keep the Orioles here, wants to strike a deal, but I haven't gotten any insight on how far along those negotiations have progressed, and I don't know if that's how much that's tangled up in the legal mess as well. But that is something we're watching to see. Do the Orioles now get a deal, and does the Ravens deal maybe provide a template for the Orioles? You know, we're gonna wait and see. Maybe we'll get that in 2023.
All these primarily men who own these baseball teams. They all lie. So I just, as a journalist, I've just have been through it. I just don't believe it. I believe it when I see the ink on the paper and where they are. It's a fascinating debate now that it is a debate because the Ravens deal's done, as we're reporting here, and you reported on Wednesday at the Baltimore Banner. I would think the team is worth more without Elise. And that's crazy of me to think that about Camden Yards and the city and the future and where they are and where the money lies and where the future money lies and where the corporate money lies and where the sport is and where the stadium's located and the demographics of our city and just all of that that we've seen in Atlanta and other places and what how baseball thinks, how baseball thinks. Baseball also doesn't think we're moving the Baltimore Orioles anywhere, but I would think the franchise is worth a whole lot more in other places. And from a valuation standpoint, they're more valuable without a lease. And if that's the case, then that would explain a lot of it to me. I don't know that to be true, but I'm registering that because that's the next thing to me to say, well, why wouldn't they have a lease? Wouldn't they have more value to the next ownership group or wherever? Until I see the lease, I'm always going to be, as a journalist, asking questions about that, Pam.
Yeah, and certainly the city and the state have, a huge motivation to get a lease deal done and keep the Orioles here. I mean, could you imagine Camden Yards being empty? Like, what would happen there? It's this beautiful stadium, and then if there was no baseball team there, like, what happens? We'd have this giant like hole, right near downtown. That is a sort of a nightmare scenario for the city and the state, and they don't want that to happen. So that's their motivation. To try and keep the Orioles and likewise the Ravens, but how far do you go at what cost? You don't want to like give away the farm, but you really want to keep these here because it's not like an empty office building, an empty stadium is would just be a disaster for Baltimore. So it's interesting to see the motivations on the different sides, and no way to know for me certainly what's going to happen.
Pam, I began this journey 31 years ago last month without a football team, begging for a football team, trying to get a football. See, I completely understand what happens when you lose one of these, so that it is a momentous thing that Steve Bisciotti signed this deal. And even though we don't know a lot about it, you'll be reporting on it at the Baltimore Banner. I'll certainly have my radar up as well. Pamela Wood can be found at the Baltimore Banner at 6 months for a buck. Go take it. That's a great deal. $6 for 6 months for a buck. You can't beat that. So go out to the Baltimore Banner, subscribe, stay local, and I appreciate you. I really feel like I've come down in this segment for you because there's been no crab cake involved. So next time we get together, we'll get the crab cake tour going. We'll have a new governor, and maybe it'll be baseball. See, you're optimistic on the Orioles, right? Are you a little disappointed in the offseason spending, or are you good?
I mean, I don't know. Last year was just such a delight, right? With the team. That was like fun to watch, and we'll see what happens. Hope springs eternal, as you said, everybody's, zero record, and I'm always optimistic. I don't know if I'm gonna make it to opening day this year. It's in the last week of the General Assembly session. It's hard to get away from Annapolis. I think personally, I think it should be a civic holiday that like we could all get the day off. But I
And
don't think
once
I
we
have that
get
kind of pull.
election days off, then we'll work on opening day. I mean, we moved
Sounds
to
good.
Kentucky to give you the Oaks Day off on Friday, so there is some civic precedent on some of these things of shutting down the state for a state holiday. Opening day certainly would qualify. It's April 6th. It's the Yankees in town, and we actually open on April 30th. And Pam, the best part of me knowing this is because I had you on, and I know you're an Oriole head, I had to go research this. They play, like, if you look at their schedule, and I don't want to get too deep into baseball because I'll do this with Luke, the end of their schedule, my God, they play like 12 days on the West Coast, come home and play 10 more in
Oh,
August and
wow.
September. If they're a contending team, you're going to be up late with games from Arizona, San Diego, Anaheim, Seattle in late August and September, which is
I
really
hate
kind of weird.
those West Coast games. That is like past my bedtime.
Well, they've balanced the schedule now, right? So they're not in New York 13 times a year and like all that. So there's all sorts of weirdness. And then there's stay on your side of the diamond. And then there's we got the clock on you guys. Make sure you're pitching the ball. There's all sorts of changes coming to baseball this year. So and I'm looking forward to discussing those with you when Wes Moore takes over. Thanks for always making time for us to keep up the great work. And when I saw your name on the stadium headline, I said, it's time to reach the Pam. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, Esther. This was fun.
Pamela Wood joins us from the Baltimore Banner downtown in those palatial offices overlooking the Inner Harbor. I thought I was going to get down there and see her and see Chris Gorman, see MTS, all these. Gina Shock was doing a gig down there on Friday at the Hard Rock, and Gina's gotten sick again, so we give Gina some Dundalk love out to her. She caught COVID during the holidays and had to postpone this thing. Her heart's broken. All of my buddies, Eddie Lauer and Steve Ports and John Allen, were her band. They were the House of Shock. So we will stay in touch with our friends over 100.7, and when they get that going, I'll come down and buy Pam and everybody at the Banner a free beer at the Hard Rock for being great guests on the program. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.